The best way to learn how to be a dad is to learn from awesome dads. Welcome to the Awesome Dad Show. Here's your host, Mark Savant.
What is up? Welcome to the Awesome Dad Show. I've got a great episode lined up for you here today with Mr. Mike Trudell. Mike is a father of twins and a sideline reporter for the Los Angeles Lakers. So he's interviewed everyone from Kobe Bryant to LeBron James to Kyle Kuzma, and some of the most prolific basketball players on the face of the earth. Really, really fun conversation. And what makes Mike's story so unique is he is the father of twins, and he brings a lot of funny anecdotes, stories, different types of stresses that can come up when you have twins. I know for me, with having a four-year-old and a one-year-old, that's challenging enough. But when you have two kids the same age competing for the same amounts of attention, competing for the same toy, competing for the same amount of food, it just creates a lot of chaos. And Mike brings a lot of really funny but important pieces of information to the table. So enjoy this episode. If you're new here, please take a moment and subscribe to the show. Leave a review here on iTunes. It makes a huge difference in the amount of fathers that we can reach. So just take a moment and make sure that you subscribe. I would also like to invite you to join the community over on Facebook. The Awesome Dad Group is a great community. We've got tons of awesome dads in there. It's very active. It's not spammy. You're gonna love it. So join us over there. And look, the Awesome Dad Show takes a lot of work, whether it's procuring great guests, using top-notch software, bringing in new hardware. The whole production is a lot of work, and frankly, it costs a lot of money. So please, if you could, head over to patreon.com/actadad, and sign up for a tier. Support the show. If you're a listener, this is a great way to give back, whether it's $1 a month, $10 a month, whatever is convenient for you, whatever works for you. Head over to patreon.com/actadad, support the show. It makes a huge difference in reaching more and more fathers out there. Listen, I just can't thank you enough for being here, listening to the show. Reach out anytime. And in the meantime, enjoy this episode with Mike Trudell. Mike, welcome to the Awesome Dad Show. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Happy to be here with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm holding up here, as I'm sure you are. We're in the middle of the coronavirus outbreak right now. So I'm stuck in the home with a toddler who's just driving me off the walls. And you've got two twins. How's that going for you?
Well, I did lock the door to our bedroom, but I still can't promise that one of them will figure out how to crack it open and come in here and be a guest, an additional guest on your podcast. I would say the odds of that are about 50-50, but my wife is doing her best to keep them entertained. And you mentioned it, man. Look, I think we're all in the same boat. Your parents around the world are realizing, even, you know, for those of us that do go to a job during the day, realizing that, like, we're also home, so we're still dads at the same time in this context for this podcast. But it takes so much energy, so much effort, so much willpower. And it's also the most rewarding thing. So I'm sure we're going to get into some of that. But it's just this coronavirus thing, I think, really puts a spotlight on really what it is to be a parent.
Yeah, absolutely. It pushes patience to the brink. I get asked this a lot, Mark, what's the most important feature of an awesome dad? And I say, it's patience. It's patience. And I struggle with that. I think everyone does. So let's kind of reverse your story just a little bit, Mike, so we can kind of break it down.
Mark, let me give you a quick comment on patience, though.
Yeah.
So my wife and I have been together now since 2007 when we met, we started dating, and we've been married since 2013. But if she would have asked me at any point, or not that she needed to ask me, what is Mike's probably the quality that he needs to work on the most? And she would have told you patience. So it is not, in some senses, like professionally, that's been a strength for me, right? Like not being patient, I think, has led me to be able to do some things. But in parenting, I've really had to try to focus on that. So it's funny you bring that up, because it's definitely the thing that I still am working on developing as best that I can. But it's definitely a weakness.
Well, and I think overcoming weaknesses is part of life too, right? Because I'm not a very patient person either, quite frankly. But you know, that's one of the things that happens when you have kids, is it pushes it. I think it kind of forces you to level yourself up a bit, right?
Yeah,
I know it. Sure. I know it changed me.
For sure.
What was it like? Can you do me a favor? Walk me through. What was it like when you found out I'm going to have twins? What went through your mind?
All right, so this experience was actually somewhat traumatic for us in our specific case, and not for the reasons you might think. So we had the, let's see, I think my wife went pretty early. She found out at like the 6-week mark, or something like that. And so, or maybe it was 8 weeks when we went to see the doctor. And the first time that we went in, the ultrasound just showed one baby, or at least that was what had popped up. So we, you know, we were just excited. We were thrilled. The thought of having twins had never entered our minds, because twins are so, well, here, I'll get to this later, but we have identical twins, which are not hereditary, right? So identical twins, just the egg splits, which I did not know. They're, so fraternal twins are hereditary, but since neither of us have that in our families, we were not expecting twins. So it wasn't even on the radar. We're just like, oh, we're pregnant, it's one baby, et cetera. So we go in, I say all this because we go into our next appointment with the doctor, and I'm looking at the ultrasound. My wife is looking at me, and I see him sort of hesitate and pause. And then the first words out of his mouth are, okay, well, I'm concerned. And so you hear that as a dad, and you're just like, you know, right. This is what, like, just completely freaked out. And then he proceeds to say, instead of like, guys, it's amazing, you have twins, it's, I'm concerned, because he thought they were a specific type of twins that I'll spare people doing Google researching with the term and just skip it. But basically, more often than not, one of the twins doesn't make it with this specific type. And so, and sometimes it can be really difficult for both. They're sharing things that they shouldn't be sharing. There's a lot of stuff going on. So that was our entry into having twins. And we had to go see a specialist the next morning, and we were going to find out if this was truly the case. But that whole night, as you can imagine, was really difficult. So instead of calling family and friends and being like, oh, we're having twins, this is incredible, what? We were just really, really concerned that something was going to go badly. And so thankfully, we got through that night. We woke up in the morning. We drove to the specialist. And within 5 minutes, they have at the specialist place, and I suppose it depends where you are, but we're lucky to have some really nice and good hospitals and clinics in LA. And the place where you go for the specialist, they have this 4D ultrasound machine. It's incredible. And within 5 minutes, he was like, oh, nope, you're good. Like, this is normal twins. They have their own sacs. They're like, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so at that point, then we were able to have a release of pressure and some celebration. But that feeling of fear sustained itself through the pregnancy, just because that first moment that we had when the doctor said what it was.
That is an amazing story, Mike. Thank you for sharing. Because I know that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, of going through that birth process, is there's a million and one things that can go wrong. And I know that after we had our first child, we just like, phew, sigh of relief. And then we're like, okay, we're going for number two. And that's something they think about. Was there any way that you and your wife supported one another that night? Any tactic, anything that you did to help get through that, to take your mind off that stress?
Yeah, crying. I think I remember we called my parents. I mean, that was, I think, one thing that helped, but I don't know. I think the typical ways that people would take their minds off anything, right? We probably watched a couple of shows, you know. I'm sure we were just kind of creating. I was trying to be the, oh, look, it's probably not that. We have to wait until we find out the information. It's going to be fine. Just sort of reassuring yourself that way. But it made me think of, we have conversations these days about kind of, if we just knew less. So rewind, when our parents had us, and so for me, I'm 38, you know, so I was born in 1981. And at the time, it was just like, you know, nobody talked, if anybody had a miscarriage or something like that, or it wasn't really discussed. And I know it still isn't probably discussed enough as it should be in these days to make people feel like others are going through it. And again, we've been fortunate not to go through that, but we thought about it in a real life situation because of that night in which we thought something might have been wrong with one of the twins. So I think that we know so much, and the internet in some senses can help us figure stuff out, can help us communicate, but it's a little bit like the ignorance is bliss thing. Yeah. When I think about it, for me, and now since we know so much, we also know all that can go wrong, and doctors now have to tell you the worst case scenarios because they don't want lawsuits. And so it's this weird balance of like, of being excited to be a parent, but I found myself more often than not just worried and like, okay, we're at the doctor's office. Is the heart beating? Like, you know, shouldn't the feeling be like everything's going to be good? And you know, it was hard for us to be that way. So I hope that other dads are not like that. And I say this, I hope I'm not freaking anybody out, I hope most people, when they go to these appointments, are thinking positively and realizing that the vast majority of situations do end up positive, you know, in these situations. It's just that since we seem to focus on it, and I don't know if you did in your experience, but we seem to focus on it in these other ways.
Yeah, I mean, you're spot on, Mike. You want to focus on what you can control, but in the age of the internet, there's a million and one things that can go wrong, and you can really freak yourself out, especially if you're on WebMD. I know we had this whole birth plan. My wife and our gynecologist, we had this huge birth plan. Everything was planned out. And then the day of the birth, the primary care physician wasn't available. She was out horseback riding or something. And so this other doctor walks in, he starts walking us through all the things that can go wrong. And I could see my wife just like freaking out. Just like, we had the birth plan. And so,
right.
Yeah, it could be a little bit exasperating. So that's a good piece of advice. Like,
horseback riding, really? Like,
she's out horseback riding. Yeah. We're about to go through this major life-changing event. And
unfortunately, we had an experience that wasn't great in that sense either. And so once the boys were born perfectly healthy, they're great. Like, they didn't even really have to go to the NICU, which is uncommon for twins. So if they're identical, the one thing is they want to get them out in most places. I know this isn't the same at every hospital, but the high risk doc is like, they're coming out at 36 weeks. Because at that point, they can start to essentially take food from one another. Mm-hmm. And one can take more. And then so basically one kid starts to get heavier, the other gets to get lighter, and it can be dangerous. So we had them at 36 and they were really little and small. But same thing, my wife wanted to do a natural birth. And it got to a point where we had to have an emergency C-section. And, yeah, you know, that can be really traumatic. As you mentioned, your wife going through the experience with a doctor. But so for some women that have a birth plan and then something just changes and you have to consider the health of one of the children in our case, or typically just one. And yeah, so like there were all of these moments that I hadn't envisioned, right? When we first got pregnant, and just, you think about, you just like envision the baby coming out and here's your healthy child, but you have to go through some stuff to get there. And thankfully our kids were healthy. And I suppose that's the bottom line and the thing to focus on.
Huge blessing. And definitely focusing on the positive is where you want to be. Perfect. Mike, so I've got so many questions about twins. We've got so little time, but I got to know, was there ever a time where you felt like you were being pulled in two directions because one kid's running this way and the other kid's running that way, and you're like, what do I do? Was there ever a time like that for you?
Well, that happens daily, but I mean, this is where I think it's been important for me to have such a fantastic partner, and my wife is incredible with the twins, and she stays home with them. That is her job. And, you know, people, I know you, for example, followed me on Instagram, so you can see it's like some mix of Lakers and then my boys doing stuff. And I try to keep it, I do that for a reason. I mean, when they were little, I wasn't quite sure about how much of their lives to put out there. But then I don't know, there's just something about me that wanted to share that. And I looked past some of, I think, what some people deal with in terms of a privacy thing. And just try to share moments as best I can. And going back to the actual question, you know, as I digress, like, they're going to pull in different directions, but it's right now, since it's two parents and two adults, when I'm home, that part I can never complain about. When I'm traveling, that's when I feel guilty in some senses, even though, like, my wife is amazing and she can certainly handle it. But it's a lot for one person to be chasing two kids that are the same age around, because they have so much in common and they're the same size. And that also, while they love each other, there's also a lot of tension that can create within the context of a day. Just like with any two people, right, that share that, whether it's you and your friend or, and so that's the thing that I focus more about is like, what are the things I can do when I'm gone to somehow make things a little bit easier on her? Because when I'm home, I'm usually, more often than not, it's man to man. And if something is going on with one of them or they're fighting, I can remove one and bring them into a different room, right? Or I can go outside and play soccer with one of them, or we can create a game with them, or I can wrestle with them, whatever. And my wife is there. So I have not, you'd have to ask her, really. Like, she's been the one that's been a lot more of the challenging sort of one-on-two scenarios than I have.
Well, I think it's great that you're able to lean on your partner. I know for me, I don't know how I would survive without my wife around. She definitely keeps things in place. It's a huge blessing, especially when you've got multiples just running around everywhere all the time. How important have team sports been to you and your family and your children?
Well, it's huge. It's a big part of our lives. Certainly, it's my career. And the thing that I always say about sports is that it's, to me, at least, the perfect metaphor for life without some of the consequences of, say, war, right? So you have all of these things you can learn from it, teamwork, hard work, unity, respect, effort, right? Agony of defeat, the joys of victory. There are all of these different things in the context of sports, physical fitness and health. And all just, so in our case also, some people laugh at this, but math. Like, my boys learned how to count from watching soccer and basketball games. So, you know, by age two, they were counting up to 100 just because we're always watching scores. And when we go in the backyard and we play soccer or we play basketball, we're keeping score, and they're learning the concept of, okay, I have one goal, I scored another, and it's now 2-0. And what does that mean? So we learn geography through sports. So when I'm on the road, the boys have this map of the U.S., and we got them helmets for all the baseball and NFL teams and then pennants for the NBA flags. And so I'll call them on FaceTime from Oklahoma City, and they'll go to the map, and they'll stick like the little Oklahoma City Thunder pennant on Oklahoma City. And so they can kind of associate where I am, but then also learn geography. So I've always been a big advocate for sports, and I think I'm sensitive to it, Mark, honestly, because my brother is not a sports fan at all. He's kind of the opposite. And he's a college professor of English at the University of Maryland. And so I think I've always been trying to say, look, you can be an intellect and you can be really smart, and like, sports doesn't have to be apart from that. It can all be woven into the same thing. So for us, whether it's learning stuff through sports or just playing and making sure that the energy in their bodies gets out, I don't know how we could get through days without it. And especially during this COVID-19 hiatus, like if we couldn't get out in their store, we have a small backyard. In fact, look, it's right here. Since we're on video, it's just a tiny little backyard nook, right? But you know, but it's all, this is basically what we do all day. It's just
for anyone listening, it's just a little, it's a court. It's a court where you got basketball and soccer and everything hooked up. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's it.
I'm with you 100%, man. Getting the kids playing sports is, I mean, that's what it's all about. You got to get that energy out. Let me ask you a question. Do you let them win, or do you just stuff it back in their face? How does it look when dad's playing basketball?
Yeah. So the short answer is no, I don't let them win. But I try to reward and reinforce them playing the right way. So for example, if we always play 2-on-1, and the reason is I don't want to pit them against each other. Like, they're against each other enough just getting through their day in terms of like who sits in which car seat, who sits on one side of the table. I don't know if your kids are like this, man, but like who got the bigger helping of ice cream? Who got 6 French fries instead of 5? Like, it's a constant battle with them of competition. And I actually don't mind that. I think competition is great. It breeds success if modified by my wife. So we're playing in the backyard and it's 2-on-1. If they are passing to each other and moving in soccer and sort of creating angles for themselves, I may try to get to the ball a little bit more slowly than if one of them is just playing selfishly and only wanting to shoot himself. And then I'll go up and stuff him. Same thing in basketball. If there's one just dribbling around for the whole time and not involving his brother, I am more likely to block the shot. So I win most of the games, but I'd say like 1 out of every 10, it's not even letting them win, because they're getting good enough now where if they do pass to each other, I actually can't get to the other place. And they're so small yet quick that like now I would have to foul them to get them off of the ball. So like it's starting to get to the point where I have to try harder than I would have thought. But yeah, I'm trying to enforce good habits of good play and technique and playing the right way, as LeBron often says.
I think that's some very insightful stuff. Any way you can get your kids passing the ball and working together is, that's brilliant. That's brilliant fatherhood right there, man. That's what being an act dad is all about.
I think you're just being nice. I as I was saying that, I'm like, do I sound like a psycho?
trust me, I coach my daughter's soccer team. She's 3.5, so it's the little ones. Like, I can't even keep those kids on the field. I got one kid chasing butterflies, one's rolling in the grass. Like, they're all over the place. So getting them focused and working together, I think that's important. Because like you said as well, I know when I was growing up with my brother, we were always at odds. Like, you know, we love each other, but we're always fighting, jockeying for position. So
yeah. Were you older or younger?
I was the older brother by 2 years.
Yeah. Okay. So I was the inverse of that. My brother's 2 years older than me. And then we had a baby sister who was 6 years younger than me, but yeah, I was like kind of always the one that was striving to be better and to impress him, and he never cared. Right. And it's just like would either make fun of me to the point where I think it eventually ended up helping me in my life and strengthened me. And we're really close now, but it was definitely a challenge growing up that way. And I'm sure this is one of those topics, right? This is one of the reasons why your podcast is cool. Like everybody can relate to either having a brother or having kid. Like most people have had some interaction with somebody close in their age like that they can relate to.
Yep. Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun hearing those kind of stories. And it's cool when you hear that all fathers have their own unique challenges and issues and celebrations, but we all have the same ones as well. So it's kind of cool to see that manifest in the stories I hear. So look, Mike, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, what was it like? So you've landed your dream job. You're interviewing Lakers courtside. What was it like the first time you got to interview LeBron? Walk me through that experience.
So interviewing LeBron for the first time, I think, was helped a lot by the fact that I had already spent X amount of years. Let's see, how many years was it with Kobe? So 2008 to 2016. So I had 8 years with Kobe. And I started doing the walk-off interviews in 2012. Actually, no, I'm going to say it. So 2011. I did the road games in 2011, and then I became full-time when Spectrum lost in 2012. So I think, like, that gave me a lot more confidence going into those interviews, because Kobe was so amazing from an interview perspective, is that you could ask him a great question, he'd give you a great answer. You could ask him a dumb question, he would give you a great answer. Now, this isn't the walk-off off the court ones. In the locker room, the great thing about Kobe was if you didn't ask a great question, you know, he would sort of almost force you to come up with one if he was going to give you a great answer. And that's what the really good players and just really smart people are able to do. So essentially he's like, he's without asking, he's forcing you to raise your standard, right? So I spent a lot of years trying to raise my standard of how I would ask questions and how I would interview players and coaches as well. Like Phil Jackson also helped, because Phil, I don't know if there's ever going to be a coach who's as good at that. As Phil was. So all of that experience, I think, helped. So by the time that LeBron came, you know, I did feel prepared. And I think the other thing that helped is just I'm obsessed with the NBA. And so, you know, these guys, I think, know if you really follow the game, if you really watch games when you're not there, of other teams play, if you're really into what they actually are doing on the court, like then that conversation becomes natural. So like you and I can just talk about being dads, right? It's something that we do every day. We're comfortable with. We clearly have a passion for. And in that sense, I do have that same passion, minus a whole lot of talent and size, as LeBron. So I can talk basketball. Now he can talk it better than me and better than almost anybody. But that's one of those things where that was more of a natural type of thing to do with him, because it's a shared interest and it's a shared passion. And I had fortunately some experience with that leading up to the point when he signed with the Lakers.
Yeah, I love that. Anytime that you're really passionate and really love something, it seems like the conversation runs naturally and practice makes perfect. What was it like when you got to bring your kids on the court? What is it like for them when they get to walk out on this court and like they see the bright lights? What's it like for you to experience that vicariously through them?
Well, so for me, like I love it and I enjoy it because we all think back to our own experiences, and I grew up a huge sports nut. Who were your teams when you were a kid?
Always a big Dolphin fan, Miami Heat, Florida Marlins. I live in South Florida, so I'm on that South Florida squad. Yeah,
there you go.
I was a huge Penny Hardaway fan. I love Penny and Shaq on Orlando. That was a really cool squad. Okay.
Yeah, so I grew up in Minnesota, and my best friend from college though is from Fort Lauderdale. Went to Nova. He's a big Heat fan, etc. But we like for me. Sports were like at arm's length. Like I couldn't quite touch the professional sport. We would go to, you know, maybe one or two Twins games a year. Not all of the games were on television. The Timberwolves hadn't even started until 1990. I watched the Bulls the most because Michael Jordan and WGN was actually on. If you didn't have cable, you could still get WGN. So I would watch there, but it still, these guys felt like kind of mythical superheroes to me, right? Like they were, I was more into those guys than I was Batman or Spider-Man or He-Man or whatever. So for me as a kid, like I was so wowed by it. And I think now to my kids and like, you know, they've been going to Laker and Dodger games and going like on the court since they were babies. And I there's almost a part of me that feels bad about that. Like they're closer to it. So they don't necessarily have that same level of amazement maybe as at least that's what I thought. But I think now that they get it a little more and like when they were going on the court and now that they watch LeBron, for example, on TV, you are getting a little bit more of that like wide eyed, like, wow, you know, this is pretty cool. So it's been fun to try to see that vicariously and just, you know, hoping that my proximity to sports isn't sort of spoiling some of that amazing sort of godlike figure that a lot of us grew up in sports with. So that it's weird. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's kind of the balance that I walk with, how much they're exposed to sports versus how much most kids are.
It makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, the NBA did a great job in the 90s just trying to create these pop culture icons, whether it was Shaq getting involved in hip hop and that integration, or Space Jam, the movie, like it propelled these athletes to superstar pop status. Really smart. And the weird thing about kids nowadays is they're into completely different things. Like your kid may not be that passionate about a professional athlete. They might be passionate about this Twitch streamer, this YouTube star. And so it's kind of weird the way that technology is changing what kids are putting on a pedestal.
Yeah, that's true. And so my kids, it's funny because as much as I just said that, they are obsessed with sports. Like that's basically what we talk about all day. In addition to just playing games. So like today we've already had four rounds of Uno. I think I played two games of Sorry and one game of Guess Who. So that like we'll do that. And then the rest of it is sort of like when we go outside and we're playing games, then, okay, Daddy, this who's your team for this game? And I'll say, all right, well, I'm going to be Manchester United. I'll be Marcus Rashford. And so like, they're like, all right, well, I'll be Manchester City and I'll be David Silva. So like they know all of the athletes and all that. So that it is definitely like a shared passion now. And what I wonder is how much of that, it's like the nature nurture thing, right? Like how much of their love of sports and interest would have happened anyway? How much of it is because of just their constant exposure? Because that's what is on in our house. And that's what I'm doing all day and talking about. Do you find that with your kids? Like, do you have some passions with that or with them where you've shared or where it's completely opposite? How have you seen that happen with you?
Well, first of all, I think that that's what being an active dad, that's what being an awesome dad is all about. Because when you're restricted on time, finding things that you love to do and that your kids love to do is really where the magic happens. And I mean, it's all over the place. Like I love animals. She loves animals. So we'll just go to the zoo like all the time. It's just so cool to see that with her. Skateboarding, going to playgrounds. Like we just like, I very much like to be active and moving. And she's very much the same way, which works out well because she's a toddler and if they're not moving, they're just tearing things off the walls. But yeah, I think anytime you can find things that you love to do and your kids love, it's a beautiful thing. It's a really beautiful thing. Mike, before we get into the world famous Actidad rapid fire, I just want you to tell everyone, where can they find you? Where can people find out more about what Mike Schdell's doing?
I suppose the easiest thing is just to go to your, you know, social media channels. So my Lakers Twitter account is at Lakers Reporter. So if you're a Lakers fan or an NBA fan, that's where I spend a lot of time, certainly. And that's where I'll link all the articles that I write and the podcast that we do. So since this is a podcast forum, we do the official Lakers podcast, myself and my partner, Aaron Larsoul. And that's usually once a week, sometimes more. Now, everything is a little bit up in the air as we wait to see when the NBA season's going to return. So it's certainly an odd time in that context. But yeah, and other than that, I mean, if you want to, all of the stuff that we're talking about with the kids, I'll put a decent amount of that stuff just on Instagram here and there. And I always love seeing my friends put stuff with their kids up. I've got multiple different text chains with my friends from high school, my friends from college who will now all have kids now. And so when one of our kids does something either funny or inappropriate, we will send that to each other. For example, my kids the other day, I won't swear on the actual podcast, but a kid in their class came home and basically went through the that's effing BS And so my boys came home and they were saying it like with the proper anger towards it. And, you know, I'm not a bit like language doesn't bother me, but it's still, you know, you don't, it's one of those things that you don't want your kids to offend somebody else or say the wrong thing in class. My wife brilliantly just sort of ignored it and moved on to the next thing. And then they kind of forgot about it and they haven't said it since, but we did get it on video. So it's like them trying to sound out the words to that. And so I sent that to, I don't even know, 50 of my friends. It's like, I wanted to post it on Instagram, but then I'm like, I don't want to get into a thing where, you know, some mom somewhere is offended that a 5-year-old is swearing. So I'm not posting it, but yeah, that's the kind of stuff that we'll send back and forth.
That's great. It is definitely, I'm with you there. I remember living through that firsthand when I was a little one too. You hear something, you mimic it. And sometimes it's just a good idea as a parent, just to ignore it and let things go away. They'll kind of go away by themselves.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
I'm not great at that, but I'm trying.
Yeah, right? me too.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Let me ask you a couple quick rapid fire questions here. What's your favorite question, or excuse me, what's your favorite story to read or tell your kids?
Oh man, favorite story to read or tell. Not to turn this on an emotional note, my father died a couple of years ago. And so I like to sort of, there's one story where the boys, we got them one of those blow up houses. And it's like when you go to a birthday party, right? And they have the inflatable, I don't know, castle or whatever it is. You know what I'm talking about? What are those called? Bounce houses.
Bouncy house.
So it's a bouncy house. And my wife was like, it was like $150 on Amazon. I thought they'd be a lot more. And so we just got one a few years ago. And so we were, when the boys were, I want to say they were either 1.5 or 2. And my dad thought this was the funniest thing ever. So, and one of the boys had, while my dad was bouncing around in the house, one of my boys grabbed a tennis ball and threw it and hit him right in the balls. And he went down in a heap, but he was laughing with a high pitched squeal. And I got it on video, and the boys, for whatever reason, they just love telling that story and talking about it. So that's probably one of my favorite ones, because it makes me think of my dad in that funny light. And you know, they like to remind me of how hard they threw the ball. And so that was the first one that came to mind. And then for books, that's the one thing that they will sit down and do. Like, for the most part, they're wild and they're running all over the place, but they will sit down and read books. So that's a huge part of our day. We have to read, I want to say, anywhere between, by the end of the day, there are like 4 different sections of the day where we have to just sort of calm them down and read books. And right now there's a book, I think, called Carla's Sandwiches that they love, where this little girl makes all sorts of just random, weird, gross sandwiches, and then her classmates make fun of her, and they go through that way about being nice. And so that's a funny one that we're enjoying right now.
Good deal. Carla's Sandwiches. Like that. It's great if you can get your kids reading. That's, you're doing it right. Pineapple on pizza, Mike, yay or nay?
So I'm not one of those people who is offended if you have pineapple on your pizza. And I think it tastes fine. Like, it's good. I would eat a pineapple pizza, but it's definitely not at the top of the list for what I would order by any means. I am a triple pepperoni person. So that's where you start. Pepperoni times 3. And then I would like to add either green olives or jalapenos, depending on the mood, depending on how spicy things are, depending on what drink accompaniment. But those would be my favorites. I also would put other toppings such as sausage far ahead of the pineapple. But like, I'm cool with it. I'm not mad if you like the pineapple on the pizza, Mark. You do what you want, man.
Yeah, live your own life. And I got to say, like, based on your response to that question, Mike, I can tell this is well thought out. Like, I think we could do an entire episode on this, on the pizza toppings.
Look, if you're looking for some additional information, I prefer to have it cooked well done, extra sauce, and a little bit lighter on the cheese. Well, that's how we like to do it out here.
Okay. Hey, you ever tried honey on the crust? Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah, honey is a positive. Although what I'll typically do is I'll make the, so I'll get the side plate with the olive oil, the salt and pepper, and eat it up to the crust, and then dip the crust in the olive oil. So essentially just like you're going to an Italian restaurant.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Is it dinner time yet? We gotta be.
I approve honey. I approve honey though.
Love it. Okay. Final question here. If you had a message you could put on a billboard to reach millions and millions of fathers, what do you put on that billboard, Mike?
Yeah, I would just say just be as involved as you can. And everybody's got their own challenges in life and their own things that they have to do. And for example, I know there are a lot of dads and moms as well that feel pressure to provide. And to do that, you have to probably spend more time sometimes at work than you would like. But any time that you can create for those kids, and I'm learning that, especially now with this coronavirus, sort of stay at home mandate. It's not easy, but it's also amazing. And I think as they get bigger, these are going to be the times that I'm going to reflect back on and think, man, I'm so glad that I had this month or however long to really spend the time with them. And I think it's difficult to do that when you also have to think about, all right, how is the rent check going to come this week? How is the mortgage payment going to be made? Am I progressing in my career to the extent that I want? Am I taking care of myself physically? Am I giving my wife the time she needs? Am I giving my husband? All of these different questions that we all deal with and struggle with, but the kids are just there and they want you. They just want your time and they want you to engage with them, and which is, again, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast with you. I think it's cool to shine a spotlight on how important it is. So it just finding ways to create that time, to me, that's the one commodity that you're not going to be able to get back later in life. And so, look, I don't know how to be a perfect parent by any means. I know you don't know. I don't know if anybody does. But the one thing we probably can do is at least try to spend the time with them. And if you fail, you fail. If you succeed, hopefully that's great. But at least you're putting in that time, because every year, you know, my kids are 5. They're about to be 6. It's like that's the stuff that does that cliche that comes true, right? And I'll get off my pulpit now. I could have given you a quick response to that, but that is something I think that hopefully can be a universal thing that everybody strives for at home.
100% right. I refuse to look back and be like, I refuse to look back and be regretful that I wasn't present more. And it's a real challenge. Mike, thank you so much for your insight. This was a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you again. I have a feeling there's gonna be great things for you in the future, and nothing but success and love to you, brother.
All right, thanks for having me, man. Best of luck with everything down there in Florida. And look, let's just hope that the season resumes. Somehow the Heat find a way to get to the finals and play the Lakers. That would certainly be ideal. And, maybe we'll see you in Florida.
Thanks for joining us here on the Awesome Dad Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Mike. I found him to be very insightful, loved his stories, his anecdotes, and I have a newfound respect for all you fathers out there with twins. Mad respect. That is not an easy task. And quite frankly, I want to hear more about it. So come over to Facebook, join the Awesome Dad group, and start telling us about it. Tell us about your experience, your story. That's what this is all about. It's about creating a community of fathers stronger together. If you'd like to be a guest or you know a great guest for the Awesome Dad Show, please email connect@actdad.com. connect@actdad.com. That's where all referrals come in. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast. There's at least a fresh episode every week. And you can also watch these interviews on YouTube. So head over to the Act Dad YouTube channel. Really great stuff over there. And then lastly, before I let you go here, head over to patreon.com/actdad. Support the show. Brother, whether it's $1, $5, $10 a month, whatever works for you, please head over there, support the show, and tell a friend. It makes all the difference. Let me know what I'm doing right. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. And let's make the best quality program for fathers. Listen, with all that said, you got a lot of dadding to do. So I'll let you get back to it. And I will talk to you very soon. Have a great one. Peace.